This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices, united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
Yo, welcome everybody to another edition of the Red Bastard Podcast. I am Jeff Ketchum. I am that dirty, rotten red bastard that you either love or kind of like or detest. Like, I get some of that as well. Lots to talk about today. We are Premier League champions. Can I just say that? Like, let's take a moment and do a big bad boys 1-2. And I have to say, I'm quite disappointed that, you know, a certain person, a Woosaw man, was killed in the third installment of Bad Boys. Let's do a big Woosaw. We're Premier League champions. Like, that is, as we get started in today's podcast, the thing that I come away with a greater appreciation of post-Arsenal, pre-Chelsea, is that it's okay for us to bathe in the glory, finally. I have to admit, I've been one of these people that has been so consumed with all-time great status that it's affected the way that I've enjoyed the last part of this season. And in a weird way, God, and this is the ultimate revisionist thought, I suppose, because I don't even know that I mean it. What I can tell you is how I feel. That's as a Liverpool fan today, post-Arsenal, there's a relief that exists that I didn't know that I needed. But now, just a few days away from Jordan Henderson lifting up the trophy and us being able, like, I don't give a shit about that Chelsea game. I don't. I want to win it because I want, and I'd even be okay with a draw. Like, I don't care. What I don't want is a loss because I want to keep, even though we drew in our last home game, I want the home streak to stand. It would be completely unjust for the home unbeaten streak to end when there are no fans in the stand. So, like, I'm looking at Chelsea and I want to win that game because we want to win all of the games. But something happened coming out of the Arsenal loss that has just changed everything for me in a way that, like, I hope the rest of us can get there. I've got friends that aren't there yet. I've got friends in other continents that will have wanted those records so badly that they still, you know, coming up short. And I get it, because I'm one of these guys that I love all-time greatness. And coming out of the Arsenal, you know, what before the Arsenal game, all-time greatness felt like this thing that is so rare to have a chance to grab, that when it's there, you want it, right? If you're playing Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, and, you know, I've watched that game before. My wife likes to play it on her iPad. She's always asking me these random questions. I'm like her friend without having to phone a friend. And, you know, if you were really playing that game and you got up to $500,000, right? If you were one question away from a million, you'd want the million. You'd want the million because, by God, who doesn't want $1 million if you can get it? But going into the game, you didn't have $500,000. And wouldn't that also be awesome? Have you ever heard anybody say during the course of a day, you know what? If I can't have a million, I don't even want $500,000. You can keep your $500,000, shove it straight up your ass. Like, nobody has ever said that. If somebody wanted to walk up to me today and say, hey, I'm going to give you $250,000, but you don't get to go for the half million or the million. You don't get to go for the all-time glory. Like, I'd snap that money up so fast and go spend it. I'd spend it before it was even in the bank account. That'd be a good day. That's where I'm at now. I so badly wanted the number one thing. I so badly wanted the all-time great quest to lay down this marker and say nobody in the history of the game has ever been better. It's kind of selfish. It's understandable. We all want the glory. What's the purpose of Indiana Jones, like in Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade? What's the point of going to get that goblet? You know, you get it, but then you want to drink out of it, and then you got to have it. It's not enough that you just found the damn thing, or you found a bunch of artifacts, and rather than take the chance that you might die to live forever, maybe you could just be happy that one of the cups is the Holy Grail. Nope. Couldn't do it. Had to drink from it. Had to die. And in the case, you know, of Sean Connery and Papa Indiana Jones, and live forever, I suppose. I'm not bothered anymore. The worst thing this is the absolute worst thing that's going to be said about this Liverpool team. It's one of the greatest that's ever played the game. That's the worst thing they're going to say. I've been trying to think about this in terms of, because on my message board on orangebloods.com for the thing that I do that pays the bills, that allows me to do a podcast on Liverpool football without ever having to worry about whether or not it ever ultimately becomes successful, or, you know, I don't ever need it to pay the bills. Like, I do this for therapy. This is a therapy session for me. And hopefully I'm able to entertain and make a few smiles along the way. I have had a few people this week make the comment of, well, you know, you're not, but I can't put this Liverpool team over the Invincibles. I can't put this Liverpool team over the Manchester United team that won the treble. I've heard a few of those comments this week in light of Liverpool not being able to break the 100-point Man City record. And just listen to that. Listen to what that is. I can't say that you're better than arguably the greatest Premier League team of all time. I can't quite say that. Like, if those are the words that people are saying about this championship team, I think we got to be okay with that. I think if I had told you 4 years ago, when this is over with, this Liverpool team will be talked about in the same breath as the greatest teams, the greatest sides that have ever played, we would have taken that. God, just hearing that. Well, imagine this. I can't, like, imagine you're an NBA team and somebody comes up and says, well, you know, I don't think you're better than the Bulls Jordan teams. And I don't know that you're better than the Magic Showtime Lakers. I can't say you're the best of all time. So that's my slight on you. Listen to that. If we were in the NFL and someone was like, you know, I just don't know that I think this team's better than the 1995 Cowboys or the 1994 San Francisco 49ers, or the 1978 Steelers. I don't know if I can go as far as the 86 or the 85 Bears. If you're saying that about a football team, if, you know, if you're, I can't rank them above the 1927 Yankees. If that's the context of the things that are being said about your favorite team, then you are living in the best life, the best moment as a sports fan than you're probably ever going to live in. That's how I feel about this Liverpool team now. That's the thing that losing to Arsenal has been able to give me. And look, we could have got the record. We only had a week to go. So had they beaten Arsenal, as they should have, we'll get to that in a second. Because that's the other thing about the Arsenal game. Like, it comes with this incredible disappointment. But it's not like we played the way Man City played yesterday in the FA Cup semifinal. I saw something earlier today where they combined the stats from the Man City Arsenal game and the Liverpool Arsenal game. And it was like, in the last two games, Arsenal has given away 31 shots to, I don't know, like 8. And it was like, whoa, 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 whoa. It was 24-3 in our game don't look at Man City with their 8 shots or 9 shots or whatever it ended up being and daring to put their performance that they gave yesterday in the stratosphere with what Liverpool did to Arsenal at their crib earlier this week. Yes, we lost the game. We kicked that ass. Yeah, it didn't. Arteta knows. Arteta knows. 24-3, the shots. The shots on goal were like 9-2. The possession, the pressure, the quality of play. We lost the game, but we played well. And this wasn't Watford. This wasn't Man City. This wasn't Everton. The hopes and dreams of breaking the record died at the hands of a really good performance. I would, just like the Burnley performance, I would take this Arsenal performance and forget about the inability. We are struggling at the moment to close at an elite level. That's our problem. But we're playing really well. You know, I've heard Pep Guardiola. I don't know why it's 9 o'clock in the morning on a Sunday. I'm struggling with Pep's last name. That's why I'm the bastard. I've listened to Pep do interviews earlier this year. Man City has lost a lot of games. And after the games are over, it looks a lot like the Arsenal game from the other day. You know, Man City will have 24 shots. The opponent will have 3, and they will have found a way to lose 2-1. And Pep will say this thing about, well, I'm not really mad at my team because when you look at the performance, we played well. We dominated. The goals didn't go in. The luck and the bounces didn't go our way. But the purity of the task is such, I can't be mad at my players. I can be frustrated. But am I going to go in there and tell them they didn't play hard? No. Am I going to go in there and tell them that they didn't play well? No, they dominated. We just didn't win. And I've seen Pep give that interview 10 times this season. And every time he's said it, I've kind of understood him. It sounds like some bullshit, but, you know, because it's the thing that coaches say, but there's enough truth in that. Every time I've heard him say that, I've watched the game and go, well, look, Man City's not going to, they're not going to win the championship this year. They're not going to beat Liverpool. That's still a real badass team they have. And on most days where they haven't gotten the results this season that they've wanted to get, it's not because they didn't play well. It's not because they didn't outclass the other teams. It's because sometimes in football, in this version of footy, when a goal counts as a point, and there are only, you know, the value of a goal in soccer is more than a value of a touchdown in the NFL or a three-pointer in basketball by like a mile. If that had been an American football game that Liverpool played against Arsenal on Wednesday, that would have been like a 31-30. At worst, it would be one of these games where like the you kick a bunch of field goals because you can't score touchdowns, but because you were in a position to, you know, they gave up 2 pick sixes. So Arsenal had 2 touchdowns, but they did nothing else. So they had 14 points on the board. Man, if you dominate 80% of the game in the other version of football, the American football version, and you give up 2 pick sixes, but you don't allow anything else, but you win that game like 24-14. This version of football often can create outcomes much more easily than in other sports. Well, you know, LeBron and the Lakers kicked Sacramento's ass the other game, but somehow they lost. Like, that doesn't happen in the NBA. It can happen in baseball, I suppose, where a guy's throwing like a perfect game and yet somehow his team hasn't given him any run support and the guy gives up 1 hit and he loses. But that's the kind of anomaly that I'm talking about. Like, you have to go to certain extremes. Like, well, yeah, you could have lost that game in the American football version if your kicker misses 5 field goals and you never score a touchdown. And footies has some strange results. The Arsenal game was one of them. The Man City Arsenal game yesterday, that wasn't a strange result. Arsenal had the best chances in that game, and they converted them. And outside of Kevin De Bruyne, nobody else on Man City's team, I thought, played well. That looked like Liverpool against Everton more so than it looked like Liverpool against Burnley or Arsenal. So we've got 1 point in our last two games, but we've dominated both games. Sometimes shit happens in this version of football. And it's the thing, as a relatively new bastard football fan, it's one of the reasons why I call this show The Red Bastard. I almost certainly have not been watching the game as dedicated as many of you have over the course of your lives. I'm a late bloomer. But one of the things that I've been able to come to grips with much easier than a lot of my football-loving friends is that shit happens is just one of those things that gets said more in this version of footy than in anything else that's played in any other sport that I watch. This doesn't happen to this degree in American football. This doesn't happen in basketball. If a bad team upsets a good team in basketball, it's usually because for one game, they played really well. I've never watched a basketball game where the other team shoots 50% from the floor and the other team shoots 30% from the floor and the team shooting 30% beats the team shooting 50%. Like, that just doesn't happen. It's a little bit more prevalent in baseball because you can have an error that, you know, an error can lead to multiple runs in the way that a single error can't lead to that in football, right? Virgil van Dijk makes the mistake. Allison makes a mistake the other game. Each of those counts as a goal, and those are so valuable in this particular sport. It's just a bigger deal than a pick six or, you know, it's just a different game. It's a beautiful game. The results are a bit crazy at times, and it's the thing that I can live with. Weirdly, that Arsenal loss has been comforting for me. I wanted all the all-time glory. But you know what I need? I need to enjoy this last week. We got two games to go. We got a home game against Chelsea. We've got a road game against Newcastle. And it's the last two times we're ever going to watch this version of this team play. It's a big deal. It's rare that you get to see all-time great teams take victory laps. This Liverpool team may not be the greatest of all time, but it's in that discussion. It has a lot of things in its resume that will stand the test of time. It will, if it can win its last couple, it's already at 93 points. Like that, if they don't score, they don't tally another point the rest of the season, that is one of the greatest seasons in the history of the sport. You know, a lot of times we say, there's an old expression, you don't know what you've loved until you've lost it. How can you know how much you really love something until the threat of not having it anymore truly sticks in your brain? Well, we've got two games left with this team. Two games. And then it's over. And I love this team. I don't want this season to end. I want to bathe and live and breathe and all of it. Everything I do for the rest of my life, I want it to do inside of this team. I don't know what next year holds. I know what this year holds. This year, this team has given me more joy than any team I've ever followed in any sport ever. That's what this team has done. And if we beat Arsenal and we need the two wins to get the all-time great status, it creates a situation that for the next week, the amount of tense stuff just the tension that would exist would be overwhelming. The pressure I would sense as a fan going into the Chelsea game, can't lose, can't lose, can't lose. You ever see that movie, She's All That, with Rachel Lee Cook and, you know, It's a cast of, you know, one of the greatest casted movies of all time. She's All That. But it's been a while since I've done a She's All That reference. Every once in a while, you need to be able to do that. You have to be able to reference a movie with Freddie Prinze Jr. in it and Rachel Lee Cook and say, this is important. You ever see She's All That and Zach is doing the hacky sack thing, Freddie Prinze Jr.'s character, and he's on stage and he's like, don't let it drop. Can't let the hacky sack drop. Must be perfect. Must keep the hacky sack off the ground. And like you're watching this thing, this performance art in this really weird setting. Like I totally would go to the She's All That performance display on a weekly basis if I could find it, because that shit was weird and entertaining. People, the little short people in the sheets, and it was weird. The movie, that part of the movie is weird. Freddie Prinze Jr.'s character, Zach, is doing the hacky sack thing, and that's what this, the end of this season has felt like. Can't let the hacky sack drop. Too much pressure. Be perfect, Zach. Get good grades. Go to, you know, he does that routine. That's what this season has felt like. In the Arsenal game, we dropped the hacky sack. That motherfucker hit the ground. And now that the hacky sack's on the ground, like, I'm kind of relieved. I just am. I can't wait until Wednesday. I can't wait to watch this team play again. I can't wait to see us beat Chelsea. I can't wait to see us lift the trophy. But more than anything, I want to watch that. The players deserve that. They've accomplished something that hasn't been done in a generation. That's the thing that matters. That, more than anything else, Wednesday matters. Not for the match, not for the game. It matters that those players and us as fans get to have a let off, get to enjoy this. I can live with the Arsenal loss. I can. I can live with merely being in the discussion of being one of the greatest teams of all time instead of definitively being the greatest team of all time. That just means they'll have the Man City team, the Invincibles, that treble-winning Man United team, and like us. I can live with that. I can live with that. Little snapshots from the game. I'm glad I didn't realize how badly I just needed to get that out of my system and say all of that. It's been in my head. Some player thoughts. I'm not going to get too... I didn't watch the Arsenal game back. Usually I watch each game two or three times. My brain just likes to go back and look at what I wasn't looking for when the game was actually happening. I didn't do that with this one. I saw enough. You know, Mo is pressing because he wants to win the Golden Boot, and that's kind of out now. I mean, he'd need four in a game in one of these last two games to just get himself in the mix. Three wouldn't be enough. Getting three in a game wouldn't be enough. He'd probably need four. I'm not worried about Mo. It's clear what's happening with him right now. He's goal hunting. He's putting a little pressure on himself, individual pressure. I've been there. I've done that as an athlete. You know, I can remember going into track meets when I was in high school, and I would get so wrapped up into beating my personal best. Oh, you know, that pressure that we put on ourselves, and you start running out of chances, and it's like, okay, well, if I don't do it now, then this doesn't matter. This is a wasted track meet. And it's where I kind of think Mo's head is a little bit. His head's so into winning, I think, the Golden Boot again, that he's just not quite in the pocket. And for Bobby Firmino's not in the pocket. Sadio Mane was out of this world good against Arsenal. He is a player we don't appreciate enough, because I don't see Sadio Mane anywhere else in the world. But you think about the midfield, you know, it's a strange game. There's an Oxlade-Chamberlain conversation. The closer the game got, the more I realize in my head, they're not going to start Naby Keita against this Arsenal team. It's the move to make, but there's no way. There's no way that Klopp was going to not let Oxlade-Chamberlain have his moment in the Guard of Honor, which I love those. I want more of those. They don't help, but man, I like them. He deserved the Guard of Honor. He deserved to be the only guy that got the Guard of Honor on Wednesday. He should have, the rest of the Liverpool team should have stayed back, and Oxlade-Chamberlain should have got to go through the line 11 times. And just the Arsenal players clapping for him. He deserved to have that. He didn't deserve to be in the stands as a back. No, he deserved that. He did. He didn't play well, and he's not playing well, but he deserved that moment. And I'm sure at the end of the day, you know, I think Naby will understand that. I think we're going into next season knowing that Naby Keita is a really important player for us. That he gives us something. He came onto the pitch on Wednesday and it transformed us immediately, even while the rest of the team wasn't in the pocket. There's another conversation to be had about this team and depth and where it needs to improve. Not in this podcast, though. I'm not going to do that today. I can do that. We got two games left. In a week, we'd be doing all the podcasts in the world about these 30,000 feet in the sky conversations about all of the various players and where we go, because I think there are really good conversations to be had there. There were performances inside of this Arsenal performance that I think warrant some inspection. I think it warrants what, even in a COVID world where we don't know how much money we're going to be spending, like there's some conversations to be had that I just don't want to have today. But I think the Arsenal performance combined with the other things that we've seen, there were some interesting takeaways there. And one of them, like I said, is Oxlade-Chamberlain. Like he Liverpool have to figure out him. But he's not a starting 11 player. And Naby Keita is, and there's an interesting little reluctance that we've seen from Klopp. And I don't know if it's because he's trying to protect the body. I'm not sure if it's because he's still not completely bought in that Naby is a guy that should be on the team sheet every single game. But I think heading into the year, that's where we're headed. I think Klopp's seen answers. I'm curious about, and here I am now going into a discussion that I said I wasn't going to have literally just 2 minutes ago. I'm a little curious about some of the tinkering that we've seen with this team. I can't help, you know, when we look at, if Thiago Alcantara shows up and ends up being a player on this Liverpool squad going into next season, and I, for the last couple of weeks, have been thinking it's not going to happen. I'm starting to think that it is. I'm starting to think that this thing can be done, that, you know, he's not paid very much at Bayern Munich right now. So he could get like a big time raise and not even be an issue in the locker room for the Liverpool players. I think he makes like less than 100,000 a week at Bayern Munich. So you could put him on, I don't know, James Milner money, and like he would be making more money. And I think happy. I think you can give him a new contract, pay him without going through the roof, and you have a happy player and a better player in your team. If Thiago were to join Liverpool, I've wondered what it means for Fabinho. I wonder what Liverpool's doing from a formation and from a shape standpoint, and we've been watching Fabinho play a little bit deeper. Essentially, it at times looks like Liverpool's playing with a back three. I mean, there are times when balls are getting cleared out and Fabinho is deeper than Van Dijk and Gomez. He's redistributing the ball and lying deeper back, and it is allowing Liverpool to essentially move its fullbacks into midfield. and Liverpool's kind of playing with a back three. What would that look like with Thiago? Would we see a situation next year where we could see Fabinho and Thiago on the field together and you would have Fabinho essentially maybe replace? I don't know. Like, this is the thing I can't figure out. Is Fabinho potentially becoming a center back, if not in name, in functionality? And if that's the case, what does it do with our midfield? What does, as much as we love Joe Gomez, what would it mean? This is a conversation for another day. I just throw this out there before I move along. What would it mean to be able to get Thiago and Jordan Henderson and Fabinho and Keita all on the pitch at the same time? Feels very much like the type of thing that Pep would do at Man City. We've seen Fernandinho essentially fall into that role, but what if he didn't wait until Fernandinho was a shell of himself? What if you could take a midfield destructor and play him at center back next to an all-time great center back, and it gives you the ability to put another midfielder on the pitch? I don't know. Liverpool, with the addition of Thiago, would suddenly have some midfield parts that could be interchangeable in ways that don't currently exist. I'm fascinated by what Jurgen Klopp seems to be tinkering with in these last few games. He's not changing out the personnel necessarily in ways I think we would all want to see it, but he's doing things at the back end that I think we may see more of next season. And how would Thiago Alcantara showing up from Bayern Munich change things? What can you do with Fabinho if you add Thiago? It is the question that I think when we talk about Thiago, we're not asking enough. Because if Thiago becomes your holder, your number six, if you will, although he's versatile enough that he can play in a number of ways, but if you put him at your number six, it's the same spot that Fabinho's at. But if Fabinho were at center back and not playing the traditional number six on paper, your creativity, your ability to play the ball out of the back, your ability to attack, it's suddenly different than this season. And this is a season where, as good as we've been, we could use a little bit more in the way of aggressiveness and attack. And I think the more and more I think about it, and it really comes down to how Klopp would want to use Thiago and what happens to Fabinho. But if you tell me right now that Fabinho next year becomes a center back and that we see a Thiago, Jordan Henderson, and Naby Keita midfield, you've got my attention. You've got my attention. Because I think if I could get those four, if it comes down to, do I want Joe Gomez on the pitch or Fabinho, I'm going to take Fabinho. Now, I love Joe Gomez, but the idea of getting someone, Fabinho, from a creative standpoint, is as good as anybody in our midfield. Thiago is better than him in that capacity. So if you could move Fabinho into a new place and still keep some of that creativity, I mean, imagine those runs that Joel Matip was making last year towards the end of the season. And now imagine that instead of him, that's Fabinho. Imagine what that looks like. Imagine what the possibilities are. Imagine what his cover looks like when you've got Thiago and Jordan Henderson putting in their work rates. Suddenly, the idea of fluid movement on a soccer pitch, right? It's one of the things I think Pep loves to talk about. Jurgen too. This fluidity. In football and moving the ball around and being able to play all over the pitch exactly the same no matter where you're at. That's one of the things that I think a Thiago move for Liverpool allows them to do. And there will be some people that hear this and go, catch you just, you bastard. You just, this is why I'm the bastard. Because I say things like, What if we put Joe Gomez on the bench? I know that Joe Gomez is one of the maybe the best young center back in the Premier League. I know that. These are rich people problems. This is first world problems of the highest order. What if we took our best young center back in the game and replaced him with one of the best midfielders in the game? Like, these are fine margins. It doesn't mean that I'm anti-Joe Gomez, not at all. It means, man, if you could put 11 guys on the pitch that all had the skills of elite midfielders, you do it. You do it. And whatever you think of Joe Gomez, as good as he is as a defender, he's not a midfielder. He's not that guy in attack. It's one of the reasons why when he plays fullback in replace of either Trent and or Robbo, although we really haven't seen it with Robbo, but when he fills in for a Trent vacancy, we're not the same team. We're not the same attack. He can't do those things. Fabinho, you lose something potentially as a defender. Although I think Fabinho as a full-time center back, you can't tell me he can't be as good as Joe Gomez. He's fantastic. He is one of our best. He has been arguably our best player since the restart. What I'm conveying is I want to keep that guy on the pitch and Thiago on the pitch and Jordan staying on the pitch. And I want Naby on the pitch. How do we get those four dudes on the pitch together and not give up Robbo, not give up Trent, not give up any of our front three? The answer is potentially center back. What would Fabinho think about that? How could Jurgen Klopp sell him that? If you get Thiago and you think about it through the context, the lens of Fabinho can be a first-team center back and your second-team holding midfielder. So if anything were to happen to Thiago, man, Fabinho, bam, you're right back in. And Joe Gomez is right back in. This Thiago thing, what it potentially does because of the way and the versatility of our other parts really, I think, has a chance to improve this team in a way that we didn't think was possible when we first heard his name. I think we all thought, well, that's Fabinho. Like, we have Fabinho. Or what are you going to do, take Naby Keita and, like, replace him? No. No. Imagine Liverpool with two Naby Keitas. That's what I'm telling you. Imagine all the creativity that Naby Keita is able to create. Now, imagine if two of those guys existed in the midfield, but you didn't have to give up any of your industry, any of your work rate in the process of adding a second Naby Keita around all of your other attacking parts. I'm in. Thiago or bust. I've now talked myself into the addition of Thiago gives us flexibility with Fabinho that otherwise doesn't exist because there's only a few people in the world that we might say, as a number six, you're going to get as much or more out of them than we will get out of Fabinho. One of them is Thiago. Add Thiago to the mix, and suddenly the world is Fabinho's oyster. We can use him in the same role, or we can tailor his role to a new role, knowing that we always have this space that he can return to with, you know, in the blink of an eye, either out of necessity or desire. But the next step for us, the margins are incredibly hard, unless we're talking about replacing Bobby Firmino. And at that point, what would you, Mbappe? They weren't going to replace him with Timo Werner. There are only a hand, whatever we think of Bobby's form this season, there are only a few people in the world that you would replace him with. This is an incredibly tough team to replace an incumbent on. I mean, Naby Keita hasn't been able to get into the midfield, and it's clear he's one of their best midfielders, but this is tough sledding. The competition for playing time is tough. James Milner exists. You know, Hendo exists. Gini Wijnaldum exists. Oxlade-Chamberlain exists. It's hard to make this team better. That is one way it can be done. It can be done cheaply. And it could make us more versatile. and more dangerous to defend against than we would otherwise be if we went out and got an attacking player. It's an unorthodox way of viewing the game. I don't even know for sure that Jurgen Klopp is thinking that way. But I'm watching Fabinho play deeper. I'm listening to Liverpool connected to Thiago. And in a world where I keep asking myself, how do you get Thiago? Jordan Henderson's not going anywhere. So let's forget about him for a second. How do you get Fabinho, Thiago, and Keita all on the pitch together? Well, there's probably only one way. And we've just discussed what it is. All right, look, that's it for today's Red Bastard podcast. There's no need to get into a Chelsea pregame. Let's win the game, but let's fucking celebrate. That's what it's about. That's what it's about. That Wednesday is the equivalent of an all-day post-wedding ceremony. Let's dance. Let's eat some cake. Let's get the garter belt off the bride's legs and throw that sumbitch into the air and let someone catch it. Let's have fun. The wedding is over. We won the season. We won the championship. There is no more pressure. We got two games left. Let's go enjoy those sumbitches like we've never enjoyed two football games in our entire lives. We're the champions. We get two more Guard of Honors. There's no more pressure in this season, just elation. And when you think about it, it should probably have been that way all along. Later.